This is Everyday Wellness, a podcast dedicated to helping you achieve your health and wellness goals and provide practical strategies that you can use in your real life. And now, here is your host, nurse practitioner Cynthia Thurlow.
Today, I was joined by Amanda Nyberg, who's a registered dietitian specializing in weight loss nutrition. She joined us in episode 23, hard to believe, back when the podcast was relatively new. I brought her back today to really talk quite a bit about weight loss resistance and specifically reverse dieting, why it's important, how you actually do it strategy-wise. We touched on metabolic adaptation, the diet industry, nutrition apps, as well as scale management. And then, you know, spoke specifically about why protein is the most important macronutrient we consume and how and why many women are under eating, over exercising, and deficient in their protein needs. I hope you will enjoy our conversation and definitely keep me abreast of other topics you would love to learn more about. Amanda, it's a pleasure to have you back again. You were on, gosh, I had to go back through episode 23. So when I was like a newbie podcaster long, long ago, 3 years ago, you're one of my first guests. So thank you for coming back.
I love that. That's awesome.
Yeah. So this is obviously, you know, talking about reverse dieting, that was the impetus for kind of reaching out because I saw you had quite a bit of content on it. But obviously in our businesses, we are talking to women multiple times a day, all day, every day about the role of nutrition and intermittent fasting. And I just found, you know, when I was kind of reflecting on the diet industry and there, it's a $71 billion a year industry. And we recognize.
Wow. Like knocking on the door of a trillion.
Yeah. Yeah. And so when you really think about it, what I love about both of our businesses is we're talking about sustainability, things that you can do lifelong, not potions, pills, and powders, which is unfortunately the bulk of what the diet industry has really evolved into. Can you let listeners know a bit about your background? Obviously, we'll include with our show notes, but I think in terms of context, and for everyone that's listening, Amanda's a registered dietitian, but she's a very woke registered dietitian, in fact, very aligned with a lot of my own ideas and perspectives and dogma. And so she has so much experience working in this industry, working in traditional allopathic medicine, pivoting away from that, and now has a very, very successful fitness business. But share with listeners a little bit about your background, just so they have context about our conversation.
Yeah. So I'm Amanda Nyberg. I'm a registered dietitian. I've actually worked in the field of weight loss for going on about two decades, so 20 years. I started my career in the clinical setting and kind of quickly transitioned into the role of a weight loss dietitian, working with morbidly obese patients who had, you know, more than 100 pounds to lose, diabetics, you know, renal patients, and did that for a good 16 years until I kind of branched out into this online space. And it's kind of like what you said, you know, initially, when I look at my education, I was taught the whole, you know, calories in versus calories out, bad is bad for you, you know, kind of all the dogma that we grew up with. And it wasn't until my own experience working with clients over and over that I realized, wow, we've got nutrition really wrong. And we're kind of doing everything exactly the opposite of what we should be doing. And it took my own experience with high cholesterol to realize that the nutrition model had to change. And I always called myself the renegade dietitian because I was the only dietitian in the hospital carrying around butter and eggs and olive oil to teach my clients about, where all the other dietitians were, you know, carrying around, I can't believe it's not butter spray and country crock and, you know, margarines and low fat, fat free stuff. And it was hard, you know, to kind of get people to realize that what they had been taught for, you know, decades was potentially making them more unhealthy than what they should be.
Yeah, it's interesting because I think about science writers like, you know, Take Holds and Gary Tobes that have had such a profound impact on my own kind of nutritional evolution in terms of looking at what I used to say to patients when I was a baby nurse practitioner in the early 2000s, versus what I talk about now. And I still think there's so much room to change and improve. And obviously all of us in this space are trying to make a large impact on people's lives. And when you really think about 88.2%, and this is a 2018 study, so I'm sure given the pandemic, given the last 2 years, it's very likely worse than that. It's time for people to wake up and to really recognize that when we're looking at nutrition, we need to look at it as fuel, and we need to be realistic about things that we need to eliminate from our diets, and especially a lot of those faux fats, fake fats. I always say, if they take fat out, what do you think they add more of? Generally not to our advantage by any stretch of the imagination. And so, you know, from this kind of antiquated dogma that you and I are obviously alluding to and talking about, whether it's the calories in, calories out model, whether it's eating, you know, frequently with mini meals and snacks, which couldn't be farther from the truth. I think on many levels, when we're looking at weight loss resistance, when we're looking at weight loss, women in particular really are, if they kind of ascribe to that old methodologies, they're really setting themselves up for disappointment because they won't have something that's sustainable. If you're constantly counting calories, very different than counting macros. And I'm sure that we'll probably kind of dive into that today. So when you're working with your female clients, and for anyone who doesn't know Amanda, you need to check out her Instagram and her Reels and her TikTok. I mean, she's this incredibly animated, athletic woman who's ridiculously fit and a total realist, which I value and appreciate about you enormously. You practice what you preach, but you also really stress moderation, not deprivation. So people can like navigate their lives and still have a life and not feel like they have to live like Spartans. So what are some of the strategies when you're working with women when they're stuck? What are some of the things that you do? I mean, we'll touch on reverse dieting, obviously, but what are some of the other things that you think about when women come to you and say, I've done all the things and nothing's working?
Yes. And I mean, I think that that's where, you know, a lot of women are, is they think that they're doing all the things and things are not moving. And I always say, I start with the unsexy stuff. You know, a lot of times it's not necessarily about calories and macros. A lot of times it's about sleep, especially as we age. You know, women, as we, you know, are pre-postmenopausal, I feel like sleep matters probably the most with regards to that recovery and your ability to, you know, reduce that belly fat that we kind of all tend to accumulate as we age. So I'll look at my clients' sleep patterns. I'll look at their exercise programs. You know, are they a cardio, you know, junkie? Do they live on a treadmill and a spin bike? You know, is their percent body fat higher? You know, do they lack muscle tone? I always say the easiest way to increase your metabolism as you age is to build lean muscle mass. So sometimes we've got a lot of, we have a lot of people out there that we can even consider skinny fat, mm-hmm. you know, where maybe their weight is in a normal range, but their body composition is way off track. And mm-hmm. there's a lot of research out there that shows that those types of people are sometimes more prone to diabetes and hypertension than, you know, someone who's, you know, morbidly obese. So we'll look at body composition. I'll look at stress, you know, cortisol. How's your cortisol? Are you living on caffeine all day long? Are you, you know, wired and tired? You know, so we'll look at that. And then also look at quality of your food choices. You know, sometimes it's not always about quantity. It's about the quality of the food you're eating. You know, there is this kind of I call it like bro science, you know, kind of macro approach where they call it if it fits your macros. Mm-hmm. And I'm sure your listeners know macros is just short for macronutrients, carbohydrates, proteins, and fats. And it's basically saying, you know, you can eat whatever you want as long as it fits your macros. Mm-hmm. But I find specifically for women that that approach tends to backfire because of the inflammatory response of gluten, dairy, sugar, and alcohol. So, you know, looking at the quality of your food choices as well.
I think those are all really important. I mean, I tend to be really transparent about the sleep piece. You know, as women get closer and closer to perimenopause, their ovaries are producing less progesterone. They may have mood changes. They may have significant sleep impact. And I always say, if you can't sleep well through the night, that's the first thing that's so foundational to, you know, our health on so many levels. So that's always number one. Number two, whether people realize this or not, we have more cortisol receptors in our abdomen. So I call it like the cortisol belly. which, you know, women will say, I feel fluffy. I don't know what's going on. And I always say fluffy, no one wants fluffy. You want your, you know, your whipped cream to be fluffy, but you yourself do not want to be fluffy. Right. And then really touching on the food piece, which is obviously something I know you and I are really passionate about. And this might be a good kind of dovetail into talking about, you know, more advanced strategies that, you know, you and I both work with. We talk a lot about fasting, the value of fasting, but the concept of reverse dieting. So for someone who's been fasting for a while, I sometimes call it like a feast day, but it's a day to kind of remind your body. Obviously reverse dieting is a little bit longer process, but reminding your body you're not starving, kind of replenishing, you know, nutrients that you may have perhaps left off the table, literally and proverbially. So let's talk about what, you know, this is actually speaking to, because I think on so many levels, there's also this undercurrent, whether or not it's part of intermittent fasting or not, where people chronically undereat and they don't realize that that alone can fuel this, you know, weight loss resistance because their body thinks they're starving. And obviously that's a really important thing to unpack and really for people to be transparent about their habits, because I have women, and I'm sure it happens to you even more, that they track their calories and their macros. And when they tell me how little they're eating, I'm like, my goodness. I mean, there's no wonder why your body's just like, I'm not giving anything up because we're starving here.
Yeah. Yeah. So, you know, reverse dieting is another strategy that I use often with clients that have hit a plateau, but there's actually a lot of different applications that, you know, I would incorporate reverse dieting with my clients. You know, first and foremost, you cannot live in a caloric deficit. Mm-hmm. You have to take diet breaks. And I see this so often with clients looking, I mean, not everybody looking for a quick fix, mm-hmm. but, you know, when someone's looking for fast results, they, you know, always, you know, drop their calories to 1200 calories or less. And yes, you know, they kind of melt away initially, but eventually they stop losing. And I'm sure you hear this often, Cynthia, where people say, I've changed nothing. I'm doing all the same things. And I used to be losing a pound a week. And now I'm not losing anything. And, you know, they still have 20, 30 pounds to lose. And this is a really good sign that it's time for you to take a diet break. You need to take time to rebuild your metabolism so that you're not in that, you know, starvation mode where your body's just not apt to, like, you know, burn fat as fuel. So I will use reverse dieting for these reasons. Number one, you've hit a plateau and your calories are already super low. So if you're grinding it out at 12, 13, maybe even 1400 calories, and your sleep's good and your stress is good and you're building muscle, you know, you're kind of doing all the things, you're prioritizing protein, then it's time to take a diet break. It's time to focus on maintenance and it's time to reverse diet. I will also suggest reverse dieting, planning those diet breaks throughout the year. You know, for example, it's really easy to go on a diet in January, February, and March because everybody's on a diet, you know, everybody's kind of aligned with your goals, where it's really hard to be in a caloric deficit in December. So I encourage my clients to really look at a 12-month period and map that out. I'm going to go in a deficit for 12 weeks. And then I'm going to take a break, you know, in the spring and summer and focus on maintenance. That's the key to reverse dieting. And then in the fall, I'm going to go back in a deficit, you know, for another 12 weeks. And then in the winter, the holiday season, October, November, and December, I'm going to take a diet break and focus on maintenance. And I feel like this is a really critical step that most people are missing. Because typically what I see is people have these big goals. I want to lose 60 pounds and they just force themselves to stay in a deficit until they get to 60 pounds. Well, it just doesn't work like that. So those are kind of the two scenarios that I implement reverse dieting with my clients: plateaus and just the need to, like, take a break because it's summer, boat season, mm-hmm. vacation, holidays, you know, kind of things like that. So let's talk a little bit about, you know, what reverse dieting is and maybe why it's necessary. I think the most important thing that I want to emphasize that I see people doing wrong when they try to implement reverse dieting is that they gain a ton of weight. Like, that's not reverse dieting. You know, the whole goal of reverse dieting is to sustain your current progress. You know, mm-hmm. if you've lost 10 pounds, 20 pounds, then while we're reverse dieting, while we're building back up your calories, we want to maintain that weight loss. And so that's why it can be a little tricky, because it's a little bit of back and forth with regards to, you know, adding back those calories. So that's really key number one, is that, you know, sometimes you have to be a little bit more keen to the scale in maintenance than you do in weight loss, just to make sure that, you know, your metabolism is rebounding. And so when we talk about, you know, metabolic response with the body, and I'm sure you talk a lot about this, you know, with your clients and your listeners, your body adapts. You know, I mean, when you start in a caloric deficit, and when my clients join my program, Lean, Living, Energized, and Nourished, I always tell them, I want to start you at the highest caloric deficit possible. And it always freaks them out, because my calorie goals for them are always way higher than, say, what my Fitness Pal gives you or what a BMR calculator gives you. And the reason for that is because, you know, I want to put you in a deficit, but I want to have a lot of room to move you through that deficit. So if I can start your weight loss at 1800 calories, then when you do hit a plateau, no weight loss, no inches lost, no change in body composition for 4 consecutive weeks, I have somewhere to take you. I can take you to 1600 calories and then ride that out. And then once we hit that plateau, I can take you to 1400 calories. So it gives you a lot to work with, because your body will adapt to the caloric value in which you consume. Okay. So there's no question about that. So that's really the first thing that I start out with regards to, you know, starting at that highest caloric deficit.
Today's podcast is sponsored by NutriSense. It combines cutting-edge technology and human expertise so you can see how your body responds to different types of nutrition, stress, exercise, sleep, and where you are in your menstrual cycle in real time. And by pairing a continuous glucose monitor with their app and expert nutritional guidance, NutriSense can help you reach your health goals. And the best part is, it's not just a program where they send you the CGM and you have to figure it out on your own. Each subscription plan includes 1 month of free expert nutritionist support. Your nutritionist will work with you one-on-one, interpreting your data and providing customized advice to help you reach your health goals. The last time I had my CGM on, my registered dietitian and I troubleshooted over some specific concerns that I had. And whether you're aiming to lose weight, stabilize your energy, or just feel better overall, NutriSense offers the guidance and support you need. And lasting sustainable change takes time and can be achieved through a longer-term subscription. That's why I encourage my patients and clients to consider 3, 6, or 12-month subscriptions, where it's actually less expensive and allows you to not only achieve your goals, but also to ensure that you stick to your healthy lifestyle for the long term. As I've mentioned before, I have found the CGMs I have used through NutriSense to be incredibly insightful, specifically to carbohydrate tolerance. I would not have known that plantains spiked my blood sugar without this information. It's also been hugely helpful for tailoring to workouts and sleep quality. And so for me, even though I am metabolically healthy, I find the insights to be particularly helpful to tailor my lifestyle changes to my blood sugar. Visit nutrisense.io/EWP and use the code EWP for $30 off plus 1 month of free nutritionist support. Be sure to let them know you're a listener of the Everyday Wellness podcast when they ask you how you heard about them. This is one of my favorite ways to take care of my health and one of my top recommendations for all of my patients and clients. Americans spend an average of 90% of their time indoors and take about 20,000 breaths a day. The indoor air that we breathe is 2 to 5 times more polluted than outdoor air, and in some circumstances, up to 100 times more polluted, according to the EPA. And did you know that air pollution is responsible for nearly 7 million premature deaths globally? So what's the solution? I want to introduce you to a product by Air Doctor that has captured the attention of established media outlets like CNN, ABC, and more. Air Doctor filters out 99.99% of dangerous contaminants so that your lungs don't have to. This includes pollutants such as allergens, pollen, pet dander, dust mites, mold spores, and even bacteria and viruses that have the potential to go on and make us sick. Air Doctor comes with a 30-day, breathe-easy, money-back guarantee. So if you don't love it, just send it back for a refund minus shipping. Head to airdoctorpro.com and use code Cynthia. You'll receive up to $300 off air purifiers. Exclusive to podcast customers, you will also receive a free 3-year warranty on any unit, which is an additional $84 in value. Look at this special offer by going to airdoctorpro.com and use promo code Cynthia. I absolutely love my air filters. They're an integral component to ensuring that the air that my family breathes in our home is as safe as possible.
Now, do you find if you have women that have been chronic scale watchers, chronic calorie counters, I would imagine that there's a lot of fear that goes into making those and trust in you, obviously, but, you know, looking at you and seeing the results that you get for your clients, obviously it works. So how do women kind of work through some of the emotional issues they may have with letting, I mean, a lot of it's trusting the process. And so I find in many ways, maybe they worked with someone before that let them down. Maybe they've tried so many things. They're just in this position of limiting beliefs. How do you help your clients work through that?
Yeah. I mean, I think, you know, I always tell people losing weight is the easy part. Keeping it off is the hard part, you know? And I think that people forget that maintenance requires a lot of effort. And the problem is that when you're in weight loss mode, you have that reward. So the effort is worth it. But when you're in maintenance mode, you're still working as hard, but you're not getting that, you know, reward every week or two with the scale moving. And as women, you know, we can never be thin enough is what I found to be the truth. You know, I may have clients that set a goal weight and hit that goal weight. And then it's always like, well, what if I could lose 5 more pounds? What if I could lose 10 more pounds? And typically it's that thinking that gets them in the most trouble because then they're trying to grind down to, you know, a really unachievable goal. And even if it is achievable, in most cases, it's unsustainable and it frustrates them. And then they get frustrated. And what do? They give up. And instead of, you know, loving themselves to the progress in which they've made, they find themselves sliding backwards and kind of gaining it all back. So, you know, I think that women are very scared to eat. It's extremely, I mean, I don't want to say funny, but it's just like, how did we get so fearful of food? And I think it's, you know, it's kind of like the old, again, the fat-free, the Weight Watchers, you know, just kind of all that over portion restriction, you know, under eating that, you know, we kind of grew up with. I mean, as teenagers, you know, if we want to drop a couple of pounds, what do? We just don't eat, you know, and it worked for us. But as we age, those types of patterns end up doing more harm than good. So when I'm working with a client on reverse dieting, that can be the hardest part is getting them to kind of trust the process. Mm-hmm. And I'll give you an example and kind of show you how to implement reverse dieting. And I'll use one of my clients as an example. So I had a gal come to me and she was frustrated, stuck, not losing weight. She had about 10 more pounds that she wanted to lose. And she was walking 20,000 steps a day. She was doing a Peloton, a spin workout, you know, 45, 60 minute workout every day. She was eating 1200 calories a day and just, you know, not seeing any results. And I said, you know, I will work with you, but the only way I'll work with you is if you reverse diet, because I'm not going to tell you to eat 1100 calories. I can't tell you to eat less and exercise more. In my opinion, you are over exercising and under eating, which is creating your issue. And she said, okay, I'll trust you. So our goal was, because whenever you reverse diet, you really want to try to increase your caloric intake by about 400 calories. That's typically the goal that I set for my clients. So when she started at 1200 calories, I said, we're going to focus on maintenance. I want to work over the next 3 months. Sometimes it can take, you know, 4 weeks. Sometimes it can take, 6 months. It's very, depending on how adaptive your metabolism is and how metabolically flexible you are, it can take a short term or it can take a really long time to add that 400 to 500 calories back. So I said, my goal is to get you to 1600 calories. So let's build up your calories to 1600. Then once we get to that point, kind of stay there for about 4 weeks, then we would put her back in a deficit. Okay. Because right now she is, her metabolism is at 1200. In order for her to lose weight, she would have to, basically eat less, which is, again, it's not sustainable. It's not good for her. So if we build her up to 1600 calories and create that as her new metabolic rate, then we can put her back in a deficit. Mm. So that was our goal. It took us about a little over 3 months to build her back up. So what we did is we went from 1200 calories and we added 100 extra calories. So we took her to 1300 calories. And I teach my clients this kind of red light, green light method mm-hmm. with regards to your weight. So when you're reverse dieting or you're in maintenance, this is a concept that I've taught for the past 20 years. You always kind of want to have that red light number, that you're kind of checking in. And I'll use myself as an example. When I get on the scale, I typically will see, 140, 141, 139. Like those are the numbers that I see. It's very normal to fluctuate, 2 to 3 pounds over the day. So my green light number is 140. Okay. My red light number is 143. So your green light number is kind of the average of the number that you see the most. Okay. Every once in a while, I'll see 138. That ain't my green light number. Okay. That is like, my unicorn. Mm-hmm. Like twice a month, I see that. So again, your green light number needs to be something that is around a lot. And so my red light number is 143. The moment I see 143, it is, Amanda, you better get your act together for the next 3 to 4 days. And what I have found is when I teach this method, it allows people to, dial it in for just a couple of days, get yourself back to kind of that green light number, and then you can relax again, And that's how you can maintain your results without feeling like you're dieting every single day. And so as we add the 100 calories, we make sure that we stay within our range. And typically the first 100, 200 calories is really easy to add back. A lot of times I'll add that first 100, 200 and my clients lose weight, mm-hmm. because they were so significantly under eating. So as we add 100 calories, 200 calories, we watch that. The minute they hit that red light number, they back off. They take that 100 calories back off and, typically for the next 3 to 5 days, get back down to their green light and then kind of add it back. So this is an example of how that would work and how your metabolism slowly adapts to that higher caloric rate. So the first time, let's say we're up to adding, 300 calories. So for this client, we're at, 1500 and it takes her 4 days to get to her red light number. So then we back down to 1400. We get her back down to her green light. That will usually take again, 3 to 5 days, stay there. And then we go back up to 1500. Mm-hmm. This time it takes her 8 days to get to her red light number. And then we play the dance again. So we back down, we get her back down to her green light number and then we go back up. And then the next time it takes 15 days to get to her red light number. So you can see slowly the mm-hmm. body is tolerating those extra calories and you get to a point where eventually you don't hit that red light number, and then you start to stabilize. So, you're at 1500 calories and you're no longer gaining anymore. So again, you want to kind of stabilize at that number. And then guess what? We go to 1600 calories and we play that dance back and forth. So for this particular client, we got her up to 1600 calories. And I was like, okay, so now it's time to put you back in a deficit to get you losing again. She said, Amanda, I can never eat 1200 calories again. Like, I don't know how I ever functioned on that little of food. Like, I feel so much better. Yes, I still have 10 pounds I want to lose, but I feel so much better. I have so much more variety in my diet. My exercise is more fueled. I'm sleeping better. She's like, I can't do that. So what do we do? And I said, okay, well, then let's continue adding calories. Let's add another 200 calories, get you to 1800 calories. So that way we can put you back in a deficit and it's only 1400 calories. Mm-hmm. And so that's what we ended up doing. Now, it took us about 6 months to add that many, you know, I mean, basically we added 600 calories to her metabolism. And again, the kicker is she didn't gain a pound. She stayed within her metabolic range. And then at that point, we were able to then put her back in a deficit and start making progress towards her next goal. And as you make progress, then, you know, once you, I mean, obviously, hopefully you're like seeing steady weight loss. And then once you hit a plateau, you reassess that kind of red light, green light number and start again. You know, you have to do, for a lot of people, reverse dieting is the missing step for maintenance. And it's also the missing step for breaking a plateau. And I just want to talk about that maintenance piece because I know you're in the medical field. I mean, I'm there and you have thousands of clients. I have thousands of clients. And I would say on a daily basis, someone reaches out to me and says, Amanda, I did your lean program a year ago. I lost, you know, 40 pounds and went at it on my own. And over the last 3 months, you know, I've gained back 20. Help. And what I have seen over and over is that people do not take the time to reverse diet once they reach their goal weight. You know, they dieted and they lost all the weight at 1200 calories. Well, guess what? If you don't take the time to rebuild your metabolism back up, you will gain weight at 1300 calories. And this is, was actually this whole like theory of reverse dieting and set point and metabolism was thoroughly studied in The Biggest Loser contestants. And I don't know if you saw that study and, you know, we may look at those contestants and say, you know, well, they just failed. They just lacked, you know, willpower. They lacked self-discipline. And that's why they gained all their weight back. But in reality, unfortunately, the show mutilated their metabolism, you know, had them eating 1200 calories, exercising 6 hours a day, and they lost a ton of weight. And then when they got home, you know, they might eat 1300 calories and start gaining. It wasn't that it was like gluttony, like they went home and started eating all the things. They didn't. They got home, they ate just a little bit more and they started to gain the weight back and they were overwhelmed and discouraged, you know, like, holy cow. And then it just kind of ballooned out of control. And that's what happens with people that, you know, lose a ton of weight in a caloric deficit and don't take the time to rebuild their metabolism in order to maintain.
And I think it's important for listeners to understand that this is still a fairly new concept, even for me to have to been learning, because there are so many women that have broken metabolisms that are no longer metabolically flexible and they're doing all the things. And I believe them, as I know you do with your clients, this is what I'm eating, this is what I'm doing, it isn't working. And it's these subtle nuances that are so important. There's this one PhD, Lane Norton, who taught, he's very caloric calorie focused as opposed to macros, as opposed to hormones, as opposed to metabolic flexibility. And so it's my understanding that a reverse dieting actually kind of stemmed from, as you mentioned, the bro science. So a lot of bodybuilders, and it really makes sense. And we've had some experts on here, you know, Dr. Ben Bickman's been on several times. We've had some other leading researchers who talk about what happens to those fat cells when we lose weight. And so Amanda's really speaking to the practical applications of how to find a workaround. It's like, we have to find a detour. How do we find our way back to our metabolism? So a couple questions. I'm assuming you encourage your participants to track their macros in an app. I'm assuming that's number one. Do you have a favorite app? Because I don't. That's why I'm curious to know. Do you have an app that you think outperforms over others that you find super helpful?
Well, my clients use my app. So we have a tracker built into the Lean app that calculates that caloric deficit and helps with reverse dieting. But an outside source, my favorite tracking app is Nutrinex, Nutrition IX. I mean, it's not one that people talk about a lot, but it is has a beautiful database that is run by registered dietitians. And it's probably my favorite. I always say, don't take macro and caloric advice from tracking apps. You know, if you sign up for MyFitnessPal, it will almost 90% of the time put you at 1200 calories. You know, so find a professional that knows how to appropriately take into account your age, your height, your weight, your activity levels, your medical conditions, your goal weight, you know, all of those things to really determine what your caloric and macro needs are. But Nutrition IX is a really great platform.
One of my favorite ways to take care of my health is to consider targeted supplementation. And one of my favorite supplements that I take on a daily basis is MitoPure. It has 15 years worth of research, 11 human clinical trials, 300 studies already on urolithin A, and it is one of those supplements that can help support healthy aging. MitoPure is the first and only clinically tested, highly pure urolithin A postbiotic. And unlike dietary sources like pomegranate juice, MitoPure delivers efficacious levels of urolithin A. The soft gels combined are 1,000 milligrams, and the powder, which is my favorite, is 500 milligrams in each packet. I've seen significant increases in not only my strength in the gym, but also my VO2 max, which I recently had tested earlier this month. And we know that healthy aging is really dependent on the health of our mitochondria, which are the powerhouses of our cells. And every aspect of health and well-being is really dependent on mitochondrial health, whether it be our bodies, our immune systems, our brain, our gut, skin, muscle. We know that mitochondrial health is absolutely essential. MitoPure actually triggers our body's natural mitochondrial repair processes, rebuilding and replacing damaged mitochondria with new ones, which leads to increased cellular energy, as well as muscle strength and endurance. MitoPure is one of a kind. It's backed by science that I trust. It does what no other supplement can do, and I recommend you try it for yourself. To save 10% on your first purchase, go to www.timelinenutrition.com and use code Cynthia for 10% off your first purchase. Again, that's timelinenutrition.com and use code Cynthia for 10% off. Consuming Element on a daily basis is one of my favorite ways to take care of my health. And we know that by consuming proper amounts of electrolytes, it can contribute to quality sleep, which is critical to all of my perimenopause and menopausal patients and clients. We know that magnesium increases a neurotransmitter called GABA that is known for producing calming effects. And consuming adequate levels of sodium can help you sleep through the night because low sodium levels increase cortisol and adrenaline. Additionally, if you are intermittent fasting, it's important to understand that when you fast, two things can dehydrate you. Number one, if your insulin levels remain low, it can signal to our kidneys to excrete more sodium or salt, a process called naturesis. And as glycogen or stored glucose is broken down, the water left over from the glycogen breakdown is urinated out. So if you want to take care of your health in one of my favorite ways, you can consume Element electrolytes. My favorite flavors are grapefruit and citrus, but there are many others to choose from. And if you go to drinkelement.com/Cynthia, you can get a free sample pack to try them out on your own. Again, it's drinkelement.com/Cynthia for your free sample pack where you can try all of their flavors.
And secondly, do you have a particular scale? Because it sounds like one of the things that you encourage is a healthy use of the scale. And I think this is important. This is another distinction. I sometimes have to retrain my clients to stay off the scale because they're so scale obsessed. And they think if they don't lose weight instantaneously, it means something's not working right. And so we really have to work around that. So when you're doing the reverse dieting, when you're in maintenance mode, are your participants stepping on the scale every day, or is it kind of a check-in every couple of days?
Yeah, I have a love-hate relationship with the scale. I mean, and personally, again, in my 7-week program, my clients are not allowed to weigh and measure because we dictate our lives by what that number is. We dictate our progress, you know. As you know, weight loss is not a ski slope. Mm-hmm. Sometimes you have to gain a pound to lose two, and progress doesn't happen overnight. So, you know, you may lose 3 pounds in the first week and you may gain a pound in the next week. It doesn't mean what you're doing isn't working. It's just how it works. So, but when you are doing reverse dieting and you are in maintenance, I think the scale is very important because you can put on 10 pounds before it shows up in your clothes. Yeah. And again, you know, what I found in the clinical setting, working with people that have lost 150, 200 pounds, I always tell it, sometimes it's like, we're a little, especially when you've lost 200 pounds, it's like, oh, well, it's just 10 pounds. I'm still down 190 pounds, but it's almost like that's how it happens. You know, first it's just, you know, 5 pounds and my clothes still fit. And then it's 10 pounds. I mean, it's just slow and steady. Yeah. So I feel like, I mean, in my life, this is what I have lived by. It's a hard line, you know, 143 is my hard line. Yes. Sometimes I come home from vacation and I'm at 145. I'm not saying I never go over that, but I found tremendous success in just keeping that very hard line, you know, with regards to what I never want to go over. Because I always say, if you never let yourself gain more than 3 pounds, 4 pounds, 5 pounds, you never have a weight problem again. So that is a tricky thing. You know, again, in maintenance, you do have to recognize that you're always going to gain and lose a couple of pounds every day. So I'm more of a scale fan for maintenance and reverse dieting, because the goal is not weight loss, than I am for weight loss. You know, I think for weight loss, you want to check in about every 4 weeks and look at more than just the scale, look at measurements, body composition, you know, things like that. So particular scale I like, I mean, you know, I think the most important thing is that you're using the same scale. Like, don't compare your weights on different scales. I do love scales that track body composition. The at home body, you know, comp scales, they're not extremely accurate, you know, but they are accurate at tracking trends, you know. So when you see a 1% reduction in your percent body fat, that is true. Now, are you really 25% body fat? Well, that could be relative, you know. So with regards to scale, again, just consistency, don't weigh on different scales. And then if you can get one, you know, that will look at more than just your weight, I think that's beneficial.
I think those are important distinctions. And it makes me giggle, because in cardiology, we had a lot of women who didn't want to step on the scale. The nurses would always come tell me, Mrs. So-and-so was upset. You know, she took her shoes off, put her handbag down, took off her sweat. I mean, everything to get it down to a certain amount. And then they would always say, but you don't understand. That's not what I weigh at home. And I was like, we get it. We get it. We totally get it. Now, in terms of macros, so when your client, just so that I fully understand, so when your clients are kind of tweaking up their macro intake, are they more focused on, I'm assuming, probably protein, or are they consuming larger portions of healthy fat? There's probably a lot of nuances, and I'm sure we could get very granular about this, but I'm just out of utter curiosity. What does that typically look like? When you gave the example of the woman who was hovering at 1200 calories for years and over-exercising, I'm curious to know, was it the protein that she found more satiating when she increased that from maybe 6 ounces to 8 ounces? Or was it a larger portion of fat? Just curious what that looked like. Because it's easy. Obviously, we know this. It's very easy to bump up your fat portions and hit 100 extra calories like effortlessly, but probably a little more challenging.
Yeah. So, you know, when I look at macros, I'm always teaching my clients, like, we go by a percentage, you know, so a certain percentage of protein, fat versus carbs. And so when you add 100 calories, you're kind of adding a little bit in each percentage box. So it should kind of, you know, balance out. Protein is the most important macronutrient for weight loss, and it is the most polarizing macronutrient. You know, everyone has a lot to say about protein, especially where you get it. But I know we align in the fact that women need quality animal protein, period. So that's like a whole nother podcast. But so when we are, that I'm sure you've already done before, but when we are adding those 100, 200 calories, I definitely typically encourage my clients to, you know, add it in the extra form of more proteins and fats, because proteins and fats fill you up and keep you full much longer. Now, I'm not carb phobic either. I think that that's another issue, you know, is that while we recognize that carbohydrates, sugar, you know, that is enemy number one with us right now, it doesn't mean all carbs are bad. And it doesn't mean that you have to eat no carbs for the rest of your life in order to see results. It's about finding that balance. It's like the right ratio, you know, of carbs, fats, and proteins kind of at each meal. So yeah, they kind of proportionately go up.
Well, and it's interesting, because I think on so many levels, and I know you also speak to this, like, bioindividuality rules. There are some of us that digest fattier meat better than others. There are some people who do better with a higher protein diet. I think what I always come back to is women who want to lose weight, and then they have a very carb-centric focused diet. You know, I have quite a few people that are plant-based in my current intermittent fasting group, and it's been a challenge for my team and I to coach them because, you know, if you aren't eating animal-based protein, it is very hard to get to those protein macros and stay lower carbohydrate. It doesn't mean ketogenic, but you know, we really have been spinning our heads trying to make sure that we're supporting these individuals. But I always tell them, like, if you're not eating enough protein, then you're eating too many carbs. And if you're eating too many carbs, you're not hitting your protein intake. And so we go back and forth all the time. It's really kind of a challenge. I don't know if that's been something that you've experienced with your own clients working with.
Yeah. You know, I tell my plant-based clients, I'm like, listen, your protein needs are no different than mine. Mm-hmm. You just choose to make it a little bit harder to get your protein in. Mm-hmm. And again, the thing that frustrates me, and I know there's some very well-intended, you know, vegans out there that are all about animal rights and, you know, all, and I totally support that. But if you think that being a vegan is the healthiest way to eat, then you, I just personally feel like you've been misinformed. You've watched the wrong documentary. You know, you've listened to the wrong person, because I just feel like quality animal protein is a vital, plays a vital role in especially women's health. So I agree. I have a hard time, you know, working with that client base. And here's the thing. I mean, I guess for me, if I was, you know, dead set in being a vegan or whatever, I would probably eat a lot of tofu. I'd eat a lot of tempeh. I'd eat a lot of, you know, edamame and, you know, hemp hearts and all these things. But then they're like, oh, I don't like all that. No, I'm not. I don't want to eat tofu. I don't want to, you know, that stuff is disgusting. And I'm like, what the heck are you eating? Right. You know? So I am a plant-based eater. Okay. Mm-hmm. 75% of my plate twice a day is plants. All right. But I'm also focused on kind of getting that quality animal protein in. And like I said, you know, it doesn't matter where you get your protein, you still need it. So, and your ability to balance out those carbohydrates, you know, with your protein, that kind of appropriate ratio gets a lot more challenging. It's not impossible, but definitely takes a lot more effort.
No, and I was telling a 32-year-old client that I have, trying to explain to her that what I ate in my 20s and 30s is definitely very different than what I eat in my 40s and into my, I just turned 50 this year, but, you know, into my 50s. And so really hoping that women understand that as we become physiologically more insulin resistant, I don't care how fit you are, that is a byproduct of the loss of estrogen. You know, as we're heading into perimenopause and into menopause, if you're not replacing some of those hormones, you become physiologically much more prone to insulin resistance. And if the bulk of the population is already, you know, metabolically inflexible. The other piece that I think is always fascinating is that we hit our peak bone and muscle mass in our 20s and 30s. And then there's something called sarcopenia. And so this is a lot of what Amanda is alluding to, is that we are losing muscle mass with each decade. And if you're not hitting those protein macros, if you're not lifting heavy things, if you're not sleeping and dialing in on stress, it's going to make it harder for you to be metabolically flexible. You're going to be skinny fat, or worse yet, you will be overly fat, which we don't want. We don't want our muscle to be overridden by adipose tissue. And so that's why I'm so grateful that, you know, we have this platform where we can connect and share, you know, information that's so helpful for women in terms of being north of 35 or 40.
I don't know if you mentioned, but you know, protein utilization decreases as we age, you know? So when we're 20, we utilize potentially 100% of the 20 grams of protein we just consumed. But when we're 50, 60, 70, we consume 20 grams of protein, but we don't utilize it all, which makes our protein needs even higher as we age, because our body doesn't utilize it as efficiently as it used to. Which is just, again, another reason why, you know, the way that you eat when you're 20 and what you can get away with when you're really young is significantly different than, you know, the way that you eat and treat your body as you age.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. Last question for you. Now, when you're working with women that are in those perimenopause years, 5 to 10 years preceding menopause into menopause, do you find, and this is a question that came up in one of my monthly groups, and I mentioned that we were going to connect, Do you find that it's harder for women to build muscle? Because I'm starting to see that, whether it's the loss of testosterone, the loss of estrogen or estradiol, even with doing all the things, it seems that a lot of women struggle just to maintain muscle in those years. Do you find that to be problematic for your clients as well?
Yeah, and I think it comes down to exactly what we just said, you know, because you are trying to build muscle. Obviously, we need adequate protein in order to build muscle, but you're still eating the same amount of protein you did, you know, 30 years ago. And it's hard. You know, I always say that most women over 50 need at least 75% of their weight in protein. So if you weigh 200 pounds, you know, that's 150 grams of protein, which is a big number. It's not easy to get in. And when you add in intermittent fasting, which we know is a really powerful health strategy, it can make it even trickier. And that's why, you know, the number one thing that I teach my clients in Lean is the importance of prioritizing protein. You know your protein goal, divide it by three, make sure you're hitting that meal minimum. You know, if you need a 90 grams of protein, then you better be getting 30 grams three times a day. And if you simply do that, you don't have to track all the other macros because A, you're going to be full and satisfied because you're going to be eating a big, you know, chunk of quality protein. And B, you know, you're going to hit the macro that means the most.
No, I have to agree. And I find most women, when they kind of fall into my lab, they're probably consuming 50 or 60 grams of protein a day. And when I say to them, we want to aim for 100, they're always like, how do I do that? How do I fast and do that? And I always say, I can tell you what I do. I have two very solid meals where I try to hit 40 to 50 grams of protein. Some days I have to throw in a protein shake, and there's no shame in that. Like, let's be very transparent that we all have busy days where maybe it's a day where I'm doing a lot of recording and it's just, you know, I've got kids to take to carpool because they're not driving yet. Thank God that's coming. But it's definitely one of those challenges that I think, you know, even those of us that are in this space talking about these things, that we acknowledge that if you're working within an intermittent fasting space, you know, how do you navigate that successfully? Well, Amanda, let my listeners know how to connect with you. You've got a great YouTube, Reels, TikTok. I've been enjoying your TikTok videos in particular. How can they connect with you? How can they find you?
I'm everywhere. Yes. I'm literally on every platform. Yeah. So my name's Amanda Nybert. Most of my tags are Amanda Nybert RD. Check out my website. I actually have a guide to reverse dieting in my shop that you can purchase, and it gives you the specifics of implementing reverse dieting. It gives you the chart to fill out every day so you know exactly what tweaks you need to be making, your red light, your green light number. So that resource can be really helpful. But yeah, check it out. Follow along. I am of the mindset where I'm an open book, very much like Cynthia. I'm going to give you all the tools. You know, people usually sign up to work with me because they need the support and accountability. And that's what me and Cynthia typically provide for our clients. That's for sure.
Awesome. Thank you again for your time today.
Thanks.
Thanks for listening to Everyday Wellness. If you loved this episode, please leave us a rating and review, subscribe, and remember, tell a friend. And if you want to connect with us online, visit the link in the show notes.